From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Palace Theater in Waterbury, Connecticut, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you all. Thank you, everybody. Great to be here in Waterbury. I know you're excited, and I don't blame you, because we do have a great show for you today. It's also going to be a great one for us, and this is why. Look, we admit it. We at NPR, we have to make ourselves more exciting. We're all steak, no sizzle. And the steak, actually tofu. Anyway, who better to tell us how to spice it up and give the American people what they really want? Who better than our guest today, Jerry Springer? So excited. He's gonna revamp the whole NPR schedule. So while you're waiting for the new show hitting you over the head with the splendid table, give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jonathan Chigfry. I'm from Dubuque, Iowa, but I'm calling from the phone of Bruce and Stephanie Hansen in Falcon Heights, Minnesota.
Oh, Falcon Heights. Well, what are you doing there in Minnesota?
I'm a licensed music teacher in Minnesota, but right now I'm a stay-at-home fiancé. And
What is a stay-at-home fiancé? It's when your fiancé says, stay at home. That's what.
Are you a licensed stay-at-home fiancé?
Welcome to the show, Jonathan. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and the author of the book Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce of Boston, Massachusetts. Next, it's a deputy editor, a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, and a native of Connecticut, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Kiri.
Finally, it's a humorist and author of the new book, Don't Vote, It Just Encourages the Bastards, from New Hampshire, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, P.J.
I don't think my wife is going to let me get that job of stay-at-home fiancé.
Jonathan, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time, of course. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right, let's get started with your first quote.
Barack Obama has now fired more cruise missiles than all other Nobel Peace Prize winners combined.
That was from a blogger known as Iowa Hawk. He was noting the irony as we continued an assault on what country?
That'd be Libya.
Indeed, Libya, yes. Unlike the last few wars against Muslim countries, this one happened pretty suddenly. It was kind of an impulse buy. The president was bored. He was surfing on over to Amazon.com, and he was like, Amazon said, well, people who went to war with Afghanistan and Iraq also bought these armed interventions. And Obama's like, hey, free shipping, why not? One click. You know what it's like, though? You're sitting around, you order something late at night, a few days later, the missiles arrive. You're like, man, what was I thinking? I didn't need those. But no worries. The White House has assured us that we are not at war with Libya. This despite our bombs raining down upon it. It turns out it's just that Obama just isn't into labels. They're so confining. We have this thing with Libya now. It's good. It works for both of us. It may last. It may change. Why put limits on it? The last thing we need is Libya getting on our case every time we decide to bomb another country.
I'm not sure what we're bombing over there. Have you looked at Libya? You know, it looks like the original Go Pound Sand mission, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think we got both of their planes.
Yeah. Some conservative critics of the president, have you heard this? They've complained because Obama reportedly was convinced to launch the airstrikes by a group of high-powered female advisors, including Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Apparently, if you drop a bomb because a woman told you to, it is a sissy bomb. According to Rush Limbaugh, for example, wars have to be like Rush Limbaugh. They have to horrify the women around them.
I think Obama, like many another husband, was just failing to listen to the tone of voice in which these things were said.
You know? You think they were being sarcastic? Oh, yeah, fine. Why don't you
start another
war? Yeah,
just drop a bomb on Libya.
Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, just go ahead. Yeah.
All right, your next quote is part of a new segment on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Sing it, Carl.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you.
Carl Gasser. All right, your next quote is about the latest Republican considering a White House run.
He's a super nice fella, personal and down to earth, but he's also kind of boring.
That was John Ward writing in the Huffington Post about what former governor who declared he's running for president.
Oh.
Go with the kind of boring.
former governor.
This is his problem. He announced an exploratory committee this week, and you have no idea. That sort of sums up this guy.
Oh, man, I've got nothing.
I'm going to tell you who it is, and I bet you still won't know who it is. Have you ever heard of a guy named Tim Pawlenty?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the answer is Tim Pawlenty. Obviously, he's doing a great job of getting his name recognition up there.
Excitement is building.
He is the former governor of the state where you're standing right now. And he succeeded there in Minnesota because, unlike his predecessor, Jesse the Body Ventura, he was not completely nuts. And he plans pretty much to apply the same strategy to the race for the Republican presidential nomination. His campaign slogan will be, Pawlenty, you know in your heart, you'll have to settle. Maybe Pawlenty, not Reagan, but not Newt Gingrich either. Pawlenty, hey, you have to vote for somebody.
Pawlenty, the other white meat.
He's convinced from the experiences of Hubert Humphrey and Eugene McCarthy and Walter Mondale that America is hungering for a president from Minnesota.
Exactly. It's about time. All right, Jonathan, here is your last quote.
My breasts are full of love and life. My hips are round and well apart.
If that's not on the next fundraiser, we deserve to be defunded.
That was a line from a famous movie star's arguably most famous role, Cleopatra. She died this week at the age of 79. Who was it?
Would that be Elizabeth Taylor?
It would be Elizabeth Taylor. Well done. It'll be Elizabeth Taylor. We lost her this week. To be more accurate, it was Elizabeth Taylor, Hilton Wilding Todd Fisher Burton Warner Fortensky. That was both her final legal name and, by weird coincidence, the starting lineup of the 67 Mets. Wouldn't it have been great if her last husband had been named Anthony, etc.? She was, some say, the greatest movie star ever. She was more beautiful, more famous than any other, and of course she was more scandalous than Angelina Jolie snorting coke off Charlie Sheen's backside. The line you heard Carl intone, quite fetchingly, I thought, was from Cleopatra, once the most expensive movie ever made. Ms. Taylor said, if somebody was dumb enough to give her $1 million to make a movie, she wouldn't be dumb enough to turn it down. She was known in her latter years as a survivor of all kinds of tragedies. One example, her third husband, the producer Mike Todd, died in a plane crash. So his best friend, Eddie Fisher, came to comfort her and eventually left his wife, Debbie Reynolds, to become Elizabeth Taylor's husband number four. As Fisher's daughter Carrie put it, quote, my father flew to Elizabeth's side, making his way slowly to her front. Carl, how did Jonathan do in our quiz?
Well, Jonathan had two correct answers, Peter. So, Jonathan, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail. Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Take care. We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium back home in Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. And also be sure to check out the new How to Do Everything podcast from the producers of Wait, Wait. You'll find that at howtodoeverything.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri, this week President Obama met with the president of Chile, and the Chilean president said at their joint press conference that he and the American president were impressed by each other's what?
Oh, my gosh. Does it have to do with their bodies?
Not their bodies.
Oh, wives!
Yes, yes, they both thought each other's wives are hot. That's what he said.
That would be a great reality show, presidential wife swap.
Chilean, I don't think he went that far, at least not at the press conference. Chilean President Sebastián Piñera was talking about how much he and President Obama had in common. This was at their joint news conference. He said they're both left-handed, they both went to Harvard, and quote, I think the First Lady of the U.S. is very good-looking. Obama has said the same about the First Lady of Chile. Unquote. Piñera seemed genuinely moved by the compliment paid to his wife, but we all remember Obama also called Madame Sarkozy, called her beautiful, and he told Angela Merkel he was totally gay for her husband Joaquin. Obama also once told Italian Prime Minister Berlusconi that his favorite prostitute seemed like a great value. Coming up, the squeaky panelist gets the grease in a complainy bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, offering 24/7 customer support, and mobile apps, eSurance Car Insurance, people when you want them, technology when you don't. CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel, to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And to the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for home ownership at houselogic.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Kiri O'Connor, PJ O'Rourke, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Palace Theater in Waterbury, Connecticut, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much, everybody. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
This is John Weinstein calling.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm great.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Ellicott City, Maryland.
And where's Ellicott City?
Well, it's just south of Baltimore, about 15 miles or so.
What do you do there?
I own a consulting firm. Helps government organizations do their job better.
Really?
Yeah. Is there a lot of background?
John!
How's that working out for you?
Yeah, really? The nation thanks you.
It is an endless job, that's for sure.
In your spare time, do you roll huge boulders up endless cliffs? Well, welcome to the show, John. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is John's topic?
Hey, that's not fair.
Whether it's not being allowed to stay up late or CBS firing you from your sitcom after a drug-addled rampage, we've all experienced life's little indignities. This week, we read about someone who decided to do something about it. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of people not getting what they think they deserve and making us think about it. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I'm ready to go. That sounds great.
Here first is Charlie Pierce.
The Door County District Court in Wisconsin this week took up the case of Walter Cassavetes, who was suing the County Conservation Authority and Pete's Bait and Tackle for what the complaint calls, quote, piscatorial alienation. Cassavetes contends that the county had advertised that it had stocked Lake Crystal with 500 largemouth bass, and that Pete's promised him an afternoon of bass fishing, but all he caught were 8 miserable carp. Look, we promised him fishing, and he fished, said Pete Kosninski, the proprietor of the bait shop. He had a really good day. That's a bald-faced lie, said Cassavetes. If I wanted carp, I'd have fished for carp. I wanted bass because they promised bass. Cassavetes is suing for the price of gas, the cost of the tackle, and $50 damages for alienating his affection for his favorite sport. The defense points out that he should have known what was in store for him by noting the name of the boat he had hired, Carpe Diem.
A fisherman in Wisconsin goes to court to demand recompense for a bad day in the lake. Next, let's hear a story of righteous indignation from Kiri O'Connor.
Some people have really hard jobs. They might work at failed Japanese nuclear plants or save children in Haiti. Or they might have to visit New Jersey. Thomas Horodecki, who works in fashion for Eli Tahari at Saks Fifth Avenue, is suing because he's anguished and depressed by having to leave the gilded streets of Manhattan to take the slow, grim, smoggy drive to visit stores in New Jersey. Now, Mr. Horodecki has a point. In New Jersey, he may have seen dresses in sizes larger than 0 or 2. He may have seen clothing in colors other than black and charcoal. He may have, oh, the humanity, seen women ingest solid food. He may even have seen women who liked themselves and were happy. You understand, Horodecki is suing for $2 million.
A man suing his employer being forced to visit New Jersey. Your last story of someone complaining comes from P.J. O'Rourke.
Semi-disgraced New York Congressman Charlie Rangel is holding up a FEMA appropriations bill because it doesn't provide disaster funding to combat bedbug infestation. You have to understand, said Congressman Rangel, this is a disaster for New York. It's a disaster for the tourism industry. It's a disaster for the housing industry. And it's a personal disaster for me and some of the rental properties revenues from which I mistakenly failed to declare to the IRS. And, said Rangel, if you know New York politicians like I know New York politicians, you'd know that bugging their bedrooms will destroy New York.
All right, then. Let me review your choices. One of these was an example of unfairness complained about in the week's news. Was it from Charlie Pierce, a fisherman up in Door County, Wisconsin, complaining he was promised bass but didn't get his bass? From Kiri O'Connor, a man suing his New York employer for forcing him time after time after time to visit drab New Jersey? Or from P.J. O'Rourke, Congressman Charlie Rangel, upset that FEMA won't treat the bed bugs in his rental properties as a federal disaster? Which of these is the complaint made in the week's news?
Oh, gosh. Well, they're all pretty good and pretty believable. But it does sound kind of like Charlie Rangel to go after FEMA for bed bugs. I'm going to give that a shot.
You're going to give that a shot? You're going to go for PJ's story in which Congressman Charlie Rangel is upset that his own properties are not a federal disaster area.
Yes.
All right. Well, we actually spoke to someone intimately involved in the real story.
When you're a New York guy and, you know, you're in the fashion capital of the world, you're working at Saks Fifth Avenue, when it comes down to it, it's Jersey. I mean, they ski in their jeans.
That was Michael J. Borelli. He's the lawyer for the fellow suing over his unfashionable commutes to New Jersey. Unfortunately, as you have no doubt figured out, it was Kiri who was telling the truth this time. You did not win. You earned a point, though, for PJ for his remarkably truthful-sounding story about Charles Rangel. I wouldn't put it by him. I'll agree with you there. No. Thank you so much for playing, John.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we ask giants questions more fit for dwarves. It's called Not My Job. This week, we are honored to host a guest considered to be true media royalty. Host of one of the most groundbreaking, globally popular daily talk shows produced for many years out of Chicago. Somebody who jumps from TV to politics to music to film. Somebody whose cultural influence may be greater than the president's. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm wait, don't tell me welcome to Mr. Jerry Springer. There you go. Yes. They know how to treat you.
I just want to open with an apology. I've ruined the culture. I'm so sorry.
Really?
You're the one.
Jerry, it didn't have far to drop.
On your show, you tend to feature people who have problems.
You think?
And but what's interesting about these shows is a lot of times the people's problems aren't as bad as they think until they get on your show and find out. That seems to be a hallmark. And then they react badly to the news.
They don't react well. No. But, you know, first of all, the only way you get on the show is by calling us.
Right.
So the only way you'd know the number is by watching the show 50 times.
Right.
You know, and by then, you kind of know what the drill is. So people that come on aren't surprised what the show is like. You know, I've often maintained you could take the same person and put that person on Oprah's show and they would act perfectly appropriately.
So you think it's you that's making them get nuts and pick
up
chairs?
Well, I think it's the furniture.
The furniture. There's something about the furniture that makes you want to grab it and hit somebody over the head with it.
It's crazy. But interestingly enough, when you come on the show, you're given a list of 21 possible surprises.
Really?
Yes. And you have to agree to all of them before you could be on the show.
Are they just generic surprises?
Because they don't know which of the 21 it's going to be.
So they can't complain later, wait a minute, they sandbagged me. I didn't know that it was going to be my wife's transsexual chiropractor that
we're not
living with all along.
Yes.
But they must have kind of a rough idea what their life has been like.
What sort of surprises, if I came on your show, let's say, what sort of surprises would I have to agree might occur that I have to be okay with?
That, you know, your girlfriend used to be a man.
Right.
You know, something having to do with cheating and, you know, every show is exactly the same. It's just... The only thing that is different is the personality of the guests.
Right.
Now, if I got serious for a moment, I would say, and everyone will be offended, but we're all alike. Some of us just have more teeth.
They have fewer after they've been in your show, I can't help but notice.
Or better educated, had better luck in the gene pool of parents.
Sure.
You know, but the fact is, there is such a fan base, I guess you would say. People really, that come on the show, honestly, are people that watch it all the time. And they're mostly young people. And it's kind of cool. Look, we don't deal with life-changing situations.
I think
they're
if my
angry.
Girlfriend was a man, that would change my life. Significantly.
Oh, you're saying it now because the people are here.
How did the show come about? I mean, my understanding is that when you started the show, you had been a successful, at that point in your remarkable career, you were a successful radio guy in Cincinnati.
No, I was how it came about... For 10 years, I was the main news anchor on the NBC affiliate, and I did the news every night at 5:36 and 11. The company that owned the NBC affiliate, Multimedia, also owned talk shows. They owned Phil Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael, a bunch of them. Well, Phil was getting close to retirement, so one day the CEO of the company, Walter Bartlett, he took me to lunch and said, Jerry, we're starting a new talk show and you're going to host it. So I was assigned to it. I didn't audition. I didn't try out. I had no interest in it, but I still wanted to do the news. So they let me do both. I would fly to Chicago in the morning to do the show, and then in the afternoon I fly back to Cincinnati because I had to do the news every night. So that's how I got the talk show. In the beginning, it was serious and boring, but it was serious. And the only decision I ever made, it's one of unintended consequences. The only thing at the time, there were about 20 talk shows, and all of us were trying to be like Oprah's. Then along came Ricky Lake. She was really the first talk show to appeal to the kids. When I say kids, I mean high school and college age. And so I just thought, why are we trying to be one out of 20 going after Oprah's audience? Let's be just one out of two going after Ricky's audience, and we'll get a much larger share. Which is what we did. We decided then to go young, which meant young people in the audience, college kids, young people on stage, and young subject matter. Well, the truth of the matter is young people are much more open about their lives, much wilder, much crazier, whatever. And so then the show started to grow crazy. Then Universal bought us. And when Universal bought us, they said, from now on, you're only allowed to do crazy. And that's the truth. If someone calls us with a warm, uplifting story, we're required to send them to another show. We're not allowed to do it.
Really?
Oh, I swear to God.
All right.
Swear to God.
It's part of your credit. All right. I got to get into this because you were uniquely qualified to host this talk show because, of course, you had been the mayor of Cincinnati, which most people don't know this about you, that you had this very serious career in politics and public policy before getting into media.
Yeah, I did it for 10 years. It's what I'm most passionate about. It's political issues.
Right.
That's what I love. My job is to be an entertainer or whatever in television, and that's how I make my living. But I never confuse it with a political message, but I don't, you know.
I wouldn't be too sure that you're that far out of politics, though. I'm thinking Berlusconi.
Right.
I think he could do your show.
I think he could.
Yeah, well, I never met a politician that couldn't.
Yeah. But actually, you have to include yourself because because you, of course, had your own scandal when you were a young man,
yes.
mayor of Cincinnati. And, yes. and what was interesting about that is you actually, basically, if I understand correctly, you paid a professional companion with a check.
Yes, because my credit's real good. No, I did. It was the wrong thing to do. I was. Not that it's an excuse, but I was in my 20s. I went to see a hooker, and I wrote a check.
Your name is printed on the check. You're aware of that.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't particularly hiding anything.
How many hookers in the history of the world have taken checks?
Well, here's the thing.
It's the Midwest. We're nice.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't really pay for it because she never cashed it. She was
there you
just
go.
So amazed oh. that, oh, my God. So actually it was free. No, yeah.
I got to ask you this question. How does it feel to be Jerry Springer, that icon of a certain kind of entertainment?
I'm just a schlub that happens to have a famous show, but I'm the only person I've ever been, so I don't know how to answer. I mean, I don't know how to compare that. Okay, I used to be a woman. But other than that...
Well, Jerry Springer, we're delighted to have you with here. We've invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
Nothing Ever Happens on This Show.
Which we assume is not something you've ever heard said about your show. We are going to ask you three questions about the most boring TV shows we could find. Answer two out of three correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Jerry Springer playing for?
Jerry is playing for Amanda Mezoff. Westport, Connecticut.
Oh. All right, here we go. Westport fans.
Oh.
You can do this.
We Ready? Can't. I know Amanda.
Oh, you do?
No, I don't. No. I was just
Here's your first question, Jerry.
Yes.
We were amazed to discover that there are at least three different TV shows you could watch devoted to what rather boring activity? A, pencil sharpening. B, ice fishing. C, hair tweezing.
Now I'm going to say ice fishing.
Ice fishing? You're right. Popular ice fishing TV shows include Icemen, Ice Fishing Today, and In Fisherman's Ice Fishing.
You guys don't watch that?
No.
Jeez.
And you've never seen Law and Order Moosehead Lake?
That would be four then. That's good. All right, that's good. There's one right, two to go. Here's another question. There is a TV show which scientists have agreed. Scientists, it's the most boring of all time. Is it A three-minute clip of President Nixon talking that was broadcast into space in 1973 for the aliens. B, a 10-minute compilation of images put together to test the power consumption of new TVs. Or C, who's the boss?
Well, that's a gimme. No. Well, I'll just say who's the boss. Just...
Absolutely. You're going to say who's the boss? You should be right, but it's actually the 10-minute compilation of...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I understand. You did that for the joke because that's how you are. You're a showman. I'm with you. This is great, though. You still have one more chance, so here we go. Last question. As you know, there's a reality show for just about every hobby or activity. Which of these is a real reality show that's premiering this very spring? A, Pest Control of Orange County. B, Mad Crochet. Or C, Extreme Couponing.
Wow.
They seem to like the latter.
Yeah, I think I do too. Yeah, because it's most people. Yeah, I'll say that.
Extreme Couponing?
Yes, you're right.
You're right, Extreme Couponing. Extreme Couponing premieres April 6th on the Learning Channel. So everybody go home and reserve your space.
On the Learning?
On the Learning, the TLC.
What the?
Well, you're learning how to coupon. Carl, how did impresario Jerry Springer do on our show?
Jerry had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Amanda Mezoff.
Well done. So I know, Jerry, I know that you end your show with kind of a thought from Jerry. Do you have one for the end of your appearance with us?
May you never be on my show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Springer is the host of the Jerry Springer Show. a new dating show called Baggage. Jerry Springer, thank you so much for being with us today.
If you want to have fun, come home with me. You can stay all night and play with my TV.
In just a minute, Carl uncovers the remains of Tyrannosaurus Harvey. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Vanderbilt University Medical Center, using a patient's genome to develop customized blood thinner therapy at vanderbilthealth.com. Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes prefinished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, and cork and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And Lindemood Bell Learning Centers, for 25 years helping individuals learn to read and comprehend. 800-300-1818. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with P.J. O'Rourke, Charlie Pierce, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Palace Theater in Waterbury, Connecticut, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl emerges from his rhyme cave behind the wheel of the Rhyme-mobile. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge on the way. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. PJ, this week an appeals court judge overturned the Stolen Valor Act of 2005. Now, that act made it a crime to say that you'd won a military medal if you had not. The judge ruled the act was flawed because if you could go to jail for lying about winning a medal, you could also go to jail for what?
Gee, I need a hint.
Well, it'd be like, well, we've pumped your dog's stomach, Billy. There's no sign of your math homework, so you're going to the slammer.
For lying about why you were late for work, why your homework wasn't done,
right.
What that naked girl was doing in your motel bed.
Right. Basically, lying about anything might become illegal. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Alex Kaczynski explained the act violated the First Amendment, and if it were to stand, quote, the J-dater who falsely claims he's Jewish or the dentist who assures you it won't hurt a bit, unquote, could all face a year in prison.
Or the dater who assures you it won't hurt a bit, or the dentist who falsely claims to be Jewish.
Yeah, I know.
it is a slippery slope.
It really is.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I've told my kids that lying is illegal. You know.
They'd be punished by jail. Well, I mean, if this were to stand, as he says, it would be terrible news for just about everybody. Can you imagine it'd be like, honey, do these pants make me look fat? Darling, I need to assert my rights under the Fifth Amendment at this point. Charlie, Donald Trump continues to hint that he too might be president and not just of the hair club for men. In an attempt to burnish his foreign policy credentials this week, he bragged that he once did what to Muammar Gaddafi?
Fired him.
No.
I don't know. Danced the tango late at night as the moon rose over the desert. Dance the tarantella?
No. It's sort of the Bernie Madoff approach to international relations.
What, he swindled him?
Yes. He's bragged about cheating him in a real estate deal. The hosts of... Oh, yes. Are we clapping for the right answer or for Donald Trump? Who knows? The hosts of Fox and Friends asked Donald Trump what foreign policy experience he has. And he replied that he has lots because he had sold, quote, everybody real estate for tremendous amounts of money, unquote. And further, he went on to say, he once charged Muammar Gaddafi a lot of money to rent some land and then didn't even let him use it. Quote, I don't want to use the word screwed, but I screwed him, unquote. That's what happens when he doesn't want to use the word screwed, by the way. When he does want to use the word screwed, he says ream. That's just how he is. To Trump's, you know, in Trump's favor, many presidents have excelled at screwing somebody nobody expected. So.
Ooh.
Charlie, this weekend's BBC Radio 3 will broadcast a new adaptation of Wuthering Heights. Producers say this updated version will allow listeners to experience the shock felt when the book was first published more than 150 years ago. How will they do this?
Well, judging from my experience with Wuthering Heights, it's because the BBC is sending out 50-volt cattle prods for you to stab yourself in the side as you get to chapter two.
Not a fan, Charlie?
My father once, this is a true story, when I got a C in penmanship, my father made me copy a chapter of Wuthering Heights out in longhand.
Whoa.
Anyone named Bronte gets a pen in the eye.
No, that's not quite right. They're going to try to jazz it up a little bit.
They're going to. This is a radio program.
It's a radio program.
Okay. So they're going to add a laugh track.
That is a great idea. Heathcliff. It'll sound like it was written by David Mamet.
Oh, dirty words?
Yes. They're going to swear. Catherine and Heathcliff are going to go blue. Yeah.
I'd write that one out.
Yeah. Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights shocked readers when it was first published in 1847. All the passion, all the illicit romance. But over the years, other things have occurred to make it seem tame in comparison, like, say, everything that's happened since then. So what do you do when you want to make something shocking again? You drop some F-bombs on it. That's what you do. It's like, bleep these bleeping moors, said Bleep and Heathcliff. If the broadcast...
It will spice up the romantic scenes.
Yes.
Oh, Heathcliff. You know, just do me like a dune pony or something.
What?
I don't know.
Do me like a dune pony? Anyway, if this works, they'll probably give similar treatment to other great works of literature. Mark Twain's Bleepleberry Finn. Jane Austen's Enema. And Herman Melville's classic, Moby Dick.
The what also rises?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, that's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, or our upcoming show in Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ann Maggio, and I'm calling from Hampton, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Hampton?
Oh, very good, thanks.
What do you do there?
I work as an elementary school nurse in Springfield.
In Springfield, okay. We know Springfield. And then are the kids as complaining as they used to be when I was one of them?
Probably more so.
Really? Do they come in and complain about, like, modern ailments? Like, you know, I'm feeling upset about global warming, they say. I need to go home.
Not quite that elaborate.
Not quite that elaborate. And welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, in two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to go?
I am.
Here's your first limerick.
Neurologus Rex sounds kind of funny, and it strikes fear in none, I'll bet money. It's a great cottontail on the dinosaur trail. We found fossils of some giant...
bunny.
Yes!
Aww.
Yes!
Oh,
our giant bunny! Just in time for Easter, researchers in the island of Menorca off the coast of Spain have discovered the fossil of a giant rabbit. It was 6 times the size of a regular rabbit and 12 times as ornery. The rabbit, Neurologus Rex, is said to have lived 3 to 5 million years ago and could not hop because when you're that big, you just get the other rabbits to bring the carrots to you.
I'm just glad the whole breeding thing didn't work out till after they got smaller.
Yeah. I want the carrot. There's my Neurologus Rex.
Well, how big were carrots back then?
Oh, they were huge. The basket was the size of a minivan that thing would carry.
I bet Easter was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they also found fossilized marshmallow peeps that you could still eat.
And they were this big.
Peep Rex.
Here is your next limerick.
With my groom to the altar I'm heading. I shop Costco, where fashion is spreading. I will check out Express, 'cause it's only one dress. It's not bulk when I shop for my
wedding.
Yes! If only Elizabeth Taylor had lived to see this. Wedding dresses sold in bulk at Costco. Starting this month, brides-to-be can head to Costco to pick up a designer wedding dress along with the giant cheese wheels and bulk packages of toilet paper. The store debuted its line of wedding dresses in L.A. Hordes of overexcited brides flocked to the store to check out the $700 designer gowns available in a range of fabrics and cuts and located right next to the jumbo packs of husbands. Shrink-wrapped. All righty, then. Here is your final limerick.
Our children all gorge on sweet gummies, and they have grown supersized tummies. Concerns been expressed for our new car crash tests, because we need to plus-size our...
dummies.
Right, dummies!
Oh, man.
Researchers at the University of Buffalo say it's time for obese crash dummies to better represent our growing population
and
of growing people.
And a great, great band name.
Yes, the obese crash test dummies. We've gotten fatter while they've stayed the same size. It shouldn't be too hard. Crash test dummies are already like Americans. We can't convince dummies to walk more, even though they know every time they get in the car, it's going to crash. Carl, how did Ann do in our quiz?
Ann aced it, Peter. She had three correct answers, so Ann, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. P.J. O'Rourke and Charlie Pierce, they both have 3 points, and Kerry O'Connor has 2.
Kerry, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. This week, 4 journalists from the New York Times who had been captured in blank were released.
Olivia.
Right. According to new census data, 1 in 6 Americans are of blank heritage.
Hispanic.
Right. Amazon offered free downloads of the game Angry Birds to kick off the launch of their new blank store.
App Store.
Yes. Award-winning sports journalist Kevin Proventer of New Hampshire said that the decline of the newspaper industry had forced him to blank.
Start a prostitution ring.
Exactly. Become a pimp. Former Cuban leader Fidel Castro said he was surprised by the stir he caused when he said he gave up control of Cuba's blank party in 2006.
Communist.
Right. This week, Facebook announced that it kicks thousands of users off every day because they are too blank to join.
Too dull?
Too... No.
Oh.
There would
not
be
possible.
No Facebook if that was their policy. Oh. Young. Police say it wasn't a good idea for a man in New York to bring a blank to his DWI court appearance.
Beer.
A sack of beers, yes.
Oh.
The one open can of Bush in his hand wasn't enough for Keith Gruber, who figured the courthouse wouldn't be selling beer. The judge asked
then
Gruber
he was right.
If he enjoyed his liquid lunch. Gruber said he did. Then he was sent to jail when it came out he had not brought enough for everyone. Despite his best effort. Carl, how did Kerry do in our quiz?
Kerry had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Kerry has the lead.
All right. You flip the coin. Charlie's elected to go third. PJ, you are up next. Fill in the blank.
Alrighty.
The CEO of Sprint Nextel said he is worried the cell phone industry will suffer after Blank's deal to buy T-Mobile.
AT&T.
Right. In a major change, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended that children ride in rear-facing blank until age 2.
Baby seats.
Yeah, car seats. A state appeals court in Wisconsin declined to rule on whether to allow a law stripping workers of their blank rights.
Their labor negotiating rights.
Yeah, collective bargaining. Collective former bargaining. Secretary of State Blank died this week at age 85.
That was Elizabeth Taylor's 5th husband.
It was Warren Christopher, in fact. According to the AP, the underwear bombing suspect targeted a flight to Detroit because Blank...
It was cheap.
It was the cheapest flight he could get. After she was kidnapped from a farm in Romania, a Blank ran home at 40 miles an hour.
It had better be a horse.
It was an ostrich. British couple won their lawsuit against a wedding photographer who gave them a DVD of their big day containing blank.
Pornography.
No. Video of people's feet. The wedding photographer, Clayton Bennett, missed the cake cutting, several speeches, and got several shots of feet and bodies with heads cut off. He did get beautiful footage, though, of some people who had nothing to do with the wedding. The newlyweds were unhappy, but in truth, Bennett gave them a gift. They can live their lives blissfully ignorant of the fact that even if it didn't suck, still no one would ever want to watch their wedding video. Carl, how did PJ do in our quiz?
PJ had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, but Kiri has the lead.
No. All right, so how many then does Charlie need to take it from her and win the game?
6 correct answers.
6 correct answers. Here we go, Charlie. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Residents of Tokyo were concerned this week over the levels of radiation that had leaked into the city's blank.
Water.
Right. The Federal Aviation Authority has launched a nationwide investigation after the only person manning a blank at Reagan National Airport fell asleep.
The only person as an air traffic controller.
Right. Jury selection began in the trial of Conrad Murray, the Los Angeles doctor charged in the death of blank.
Michael Jackson.
Right. Just weeks after Taco Bell beef was found to have 33% meat, a Swedish company has claimed their sausage is blank.
Meatless.
No, 104% meat. It's extra meat. 4-year-old celebrity polar bear blank died unexpectedly at the Berlin Zoo last weekend.
Oh, I forgot his name. Dwayne.
That was Elizabeth Taylor's 14th husband.
Knut, charged with lying to a grand jury about whether he took steroids. The trial of home run king blank began this week.
Barry Bonds.
Right. When a man tried to rob a pizza place in Tulsa, employees told him that he could not rob them because blank.
Because it was against the law.
Because they had just been robbed a few minutes before. It was Rob Papa John's in Tulsa night, apparently. The man who came in through the front door to rob the Papa John's was out of luck because the guy who had come through the back door to rob Papa John's a few minutes earlier had cleaned them out. The front door thief apologized, promised that he and other Tulsa thieves would do a better job coordinating their schedules in the future. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He did. It 6 correct answers to win, Peter, but Charlie had just 4 correct answers.
Oh, no.
So with 14 points, Kiri O'Connor is
Thanks,
okay. Waterbury native.
Home court advantage.
Exactly.
Home court advantage.
This week we heard about the Obama doctrine for the first time. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict, once the president finally explains the Obama doctrine, what will it be? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals. From physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers, details at angieslist.com. The National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. And Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Nick Park. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to the crew at the Palace Theater in Waterbury. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what is the Obama doctrine? Charlie Pierce.
Speak softly, carry a big cruise missile, and pick Ohio State in the East Regional.
T.J. O'Rourke.
The Obama doctrine is, when it comes right down to it, I'm the decider.
And Kiri O'Connor.
What would France do?
And if any of those things turn out to be the Obama doctrine panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, P.J. O'Rourke, Kiri O'Connor. Thanks to Gillian Anderson. And everyone at WSHU, thanks to Frank Taveras and our wonderful audience here at the Palace Theater in Waterbury. You're fabulous. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week.